Good afternoon. I would like to call the House Transportation Committee to order. Today is Thursday, February 1st. Let the record reflect that the time is 1:02 p.m. Today we have Representative Craig Johnson, Representative McKay, Representative Vance, Representative Sumner, and myself, Chair McCabe, and Representative Mina. Staff assisting us today are Justin Hayes with House Records and Susan Quigley with the LIO. Angela Steffel is my committee aide. Thank you for your service, folks. If everyone could please silence their cell phones. Today we have two items on the agenda, one DOT presentation and one DOT bill, which we will hear and hold. So let's start with the presentation by DOT called Infrastructure Competitive Grants by Adam Moser, Program Development Chief, and Catherine Keith, Deputy Commissioner, and they are both in the room, I think. So Deputy Commissioner Keith and Mr. Moser, could you please come to the table, put your name on the record, and begin your presentation.
Thank you. For the record, Catherine Keith, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Transportation.
Yes, for the record, Adam Moser, Program Management Section Chief.
Thank you, and let the record reflect that we've been joined by Representative Stutes.
Thank you.
All right, we are ready to rock and roll.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also wanted to recognize with us here today, we also have James Marks, the Director of Project Delivery, and also Andy Mills, our Legislative Liaison, and James Marks will be here as our lifeline as needed. Dom Pannone, who's listed here on this presentation, Program Management and Administration Division Director, he's called away to another presentation, so won't be able to join us here today. So any of those questions, you can please hold and get him the next time he's up here. So with that, we're here today to talk a little bit about our discretionary grant program at the department and why it's important and why this is become a big part of what we do within DOT. And I can start out just by defining what discretionary grants are, because it's a bit of an unusual term. For funding with the Department of Transportation, we typically get formula funds, and those are funds that come from the Federal Highways Administration, Federal Transit Administration, but they come in specified amounts that are typically statutorily driven, and so we know what those amounts typically are with in reason, and they're the same year after year, so we can forecast what those amounts are, and then we can program projects in over upcoming years based on what those predetermined amounts are. However, with the development of the IIJA or Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, part of their program is through discretionary grants. Grant funding is not new to the state of Alaska. It's something that many communities and state agencies have used to help supplement our capital needs across the state. With these discretionary grants, they are different from our formula funds in that they tend to be dependent on different federal agencies, and the amounts that they give are at their discretion, and also the criteria that they use in order to help determine what projects they're selecting is also, you know, up to those agencies. So what we see with the discretionary grants that we'll talk about here may be projects that have extra priorities for equitable distribution of funding, or for projects that serve Justice 40 communities, for projects that can show emissions reductions and so on and so forth, things that are not a part of our primary formula fund programs. So what we have to do, though, to first kind of paint this picture as to why this is important to us right now, is talk a little bit about our current current transportation program. So Commissioner Anderson spoke to you a bit about the last year, you know, the year in review, and where transportation program has been, what we've been doing. And then a couple days ago, we had our regional directors talking about 2024 in our construction program. So this, in looking ahead for us, has to do a lot with our statewide transportation investment program, or our STIP, where we program out projects over the next 4 years based on our funding. The problem that we came into about a year ago was looking at our next 4 years of projects combined with the inflation costs meant that the projects that we had a year ago, we were overprogrammed by $3.2 billion because of cost increases. So the revenue that we get on a four-year basis is about $5.5 billion. We were 3.2 over that. So if you picture that, that's 7 years of our programming that we were trying to get done in 4 years. So some of you that have been familiar and watching the department as it went through the STIP process, this is largely why this has been a big lift for all of our staff here, is to go through our projects and look at how we could possibly either reduce scope on projects, what projects could be pushed out to later years, but we had to go through and find ways to get through $3 billion of projects. When we went out to public notice, that was back in July, we had a version of our STIP that was still slightly overprogrammed. It had about $6 billion of projects in it. Federal Highway said at that time, this is still not acceptable. You can't go out with a four-year program that isn't balanced to your budget. And we write this very, very true and accurate. So we went back to the drawing board and came out with our final version of the STIP, which most of you in the public know has been released 2 weeks ago, and it's pending approval from Federal Highways. And it is a balanced budget. So we now have our $5.5 billion of projects, which are here in the STIP. So I do want to comment on, you know, just the acknowledgement of the amount of work of staff and all of you to engage with this process, because it has been, you know, a lot to look through what impact that would have on the community. And because of all of this going on, we had a significant public comment period. While it was 45 days, we received over 20,000 views on our website, 1,100 comments. So here as a prop, I just wanted to show you, like, here is our engagement summary. It's a substantial document, 1,100 pages. This is double-sided. And this shows every single comment that we received, every response to those comments that Commissioner Anderson wrote himself, plus what we did in the STIP based on those comments. This is available online. You can look at it through this QR code, but it is a fascinating document. Our public out there, you know, has a lot of fascinating things to say about projects in their communities, the needs that they have, and they have very great suggestions for what we need to do. So because of the amount of need that we have, the discretionary grant program allows us to find ways to supplement our existing formula funds and address some of these outstanding projects or projects that otherwise are going to be pushed out into later years. So in this STIP, what you'll see are illustrative projects. And these aren't something that the Federal Highways Administration allows us to include or rely on as part of our program, but we can list them in the document as a way to show the public and our federal partners, you know, what our top priorities are. What are projects that we don't know how to fund right now, but we are going to pursue every opportunity in order to bring funding to them. And these are very well-known projects, including the Sterling Highway 45 to 60 project, the Steeson-Johansson Interchange Expressway project. There's a lot of big projects out there with outstanding needs that we've listed as illustrative, indicating that we are still working on them. And as things shift, if we can get other funding for other parts of the projects, we're going to move these into our STIP. With that, we have other tools at our disposal for flexible funding. And that includes an ability called advanced construction. This means that we can use future funds in this current year in order to keep projects moving forward rather than like trickle out bigger projects because we don't have the revenue this year. So it's in a sense taking out a credit on our future revenue to get projects done in the present term year. We have a number of projects that are using that as a strategy in order to move them forward, but we do try to take that with the due consideration that deserves, because there's going to always be these outstanding needs, and we don't want to have an inflated advanced construction budget. We don't want to have that outstanding credit if that can be avoided. But we also want to take care for any critical safety projects that need it in the interim. One thing we also have with this STIP is also community-driven projects. So what we're seeing with our discretionary grant program is that communities do need to have their projects listed in the STIP to be eligible for funding. And they're also the ones that are being more successful with getting the grants approved. When we're all submitting grant applications, if it's the state submitting them or a community, a city or other coalition submitting them, they're more often getting awarded the funds than we are as a department. I think For whatever reason that is, our job as we see it is to support them with their grant applications and then help them to the best of our ability to see their community-driven projects through. So we have 40 such projects that we have included, and those were at the request of the communities, largely through these comments, and that's $748 million of projects that they've identified. So altogether, even within the next 4 years, if you add up the amount of money that's up there, it's over $1.2 billion of projects that we still feel are, you know, in the four-year future, and we're using discretionary grants as an option to get these done now rather than in the next four-year cycle. So this slide here shows in a little bit greater detail what grants we've been pursuing, just how many the department has submitted, and what we've been successful in receiving. So if you, just for perspective, our federal highways formula funds, we get $825 million in 2024. And we have additional funds that we receive that are congressionally delegated spending or emergency relief funds. But our discretionary grants over the last 2 years, that's we've been awarded $531 million. So you can see that if we continue to pursue this as a strategy and have success that we've been having, it could be a way to offset and meet some of these needs that have otherwise been pushed out. So we've been awarded 20 successful grants at the department for $531.2 million. But the only way we've been successful in that is because of our partnerships. You know, first and foremost, our partnership with the Alaska Municipal League, AML, who is still our primary partner in working with communities to help develop grant applications and then get them submitted, getting the letters of support. But we continue to partner with other local governments or economic development districts, other state departments, Alaska Energy Authority, Department of Natural Resources, and even the government of Yukon, who maintains the Alaska Highway. And we're looking for funding to help maintain our corridor there. So what we can say about that, depending on how you look at it, and we're looking at this in the most conservative way possible, these grants, they do require match. And the match is typically state match, local match, or if we are able to use our toll credit authority, we can use federal funds in lieu of state dollars that counts as match on projects on our Alaska Marine Highway System. So with the funds that we've received, we would consider that in addition to the money that we've paid out for development of these grants and benefit cost analysis, that we've had a return of investment on our state dollars of 21-1. Mr. Moser here produced another calculation that if you look at the amount of money that our investment of work has produced, it becomes 1,000-1 investment. Thank you very much.
Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and pardon me for being a little tardy. Through the chair, has it been determined that you can use federal funds for the match dollars?
Through the chair, Representative Stutz, we have submitted our package to Federal Highways Administration, and it's our local office that does make the determination on the amount of toll credit authority that we do have. And in order to provide that information, we look at a number of years that we've paid for maintenance of the marine highway system, and that's what determines the dollar amount of our toll credit. So the question at hand is largely how much or what is the dollar amount that we have at our disposal to use as toll credits, but there is a federal statute that, yes, does allow that, and the question is how much is that, and that's what we're waiting for that approval or like certification on from our state office.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks. So I'd kind of like to expand on that a little. That's the federal statute. Now is not the time, but I'd be interested in that statute and if it's just ferries or what it is, because it could be railroads. What, no laughing?
Are you saying?
I'm not supposed to laugh.
Mr. Chairman, that railroads are more important than ferries?
I would never say that, but we do actually have a railroad and ferry that are kind of co-located in Port McKenzie. We could ever get finished.
Anyways, walked right into that.
Yeah. All right, continue. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're happy to provide that language for you.
Thank you.
So I just wanted to touch on project delivery. Mr. Marks here is Director of Project Delivery Division. So I just wanted to make a quick call out that in order to implement our program, including the development of discretionary grants, our project delivery processes, people, processes, and tools are more important than ever. And we talked a little bit, especially in front of the committees last year, just about our project delivery process and that being able to make data-driven decisions about our projects and to be able to show information about where our projects are so that we don't have projects that go on, you know, 8 or 10 years that when that happens, we can help mitigate those longer projects and try to get them to completion as soon as possible. And right now, more than ever, I think those innovative financing strategies are going to become important to us in these upcoming years. And so with that, as we look agency by agency, just because of how we're approaching our discretionary grants, each individual agency has a number of programs that we have here within the slides that you can see what type of projects are better fit for these federal agencies. And we've had greater success with some agencies than others. As a state, the MARAD, or Maritime Administration, has been one of our greatest success rates, so to speak. And when we look at our discretionary grant program, we're counting success both by the number of applications that are approved and also by the number of dollars that we've gotten versus how much money we've requested. So by in general, with our 85 grants that we've submitted, we've had 14% success rate of the funds that we've requested, 23% by the number of grants that we've requested. So partly what we're learning is with discretionary grants, you just got to submit a lot of them. A lot of them, it's kind of a numbers game, and good grants and a lot of them. And it's the more that we do and submit, you know, that's our only chance of getting these funds submitted. However, that being said, they require a match. And for these current projects that we have, the amount that we've been awarded, $531 million, we are required $191.5 million in match. And I want to call out that this number is a bit inflated from a typical match ratio, and that's because of the Alaska Marine Highway System Operating Grant, which does require that 50% state match. Our match, our grants usually are about 20% match. So if we don't have local match, that is match that we request as part of a supplemental request, typically, and then that's one such request that will be up for consideration this year. And at that point, when we do have grants that are up for review, at that point, we all do have a chance still if we want to accept these awards and move forward. And I think that is still a point to be made, that we can pursue these grants and go after what we think will be successful. And then we still have that opportunity when the supplemental request comes out if we can have the match made available to allow us to go enter into a grant agreement for those awards.
Thanks. Representative Vance has a question, and then I have a question as well.
Thank you, through the chair. I'm kind of surprised to see NOAA listed here. What type of DOT grants are you requesting from NOAA? I just need one example to kind of paint the picture.
Okay. Yeah, through the chair, that would be NOAA. Oh, for the record, Adam Moser, Program Management Section Chief. One of the NOAA funding opportunities that we have applied for and will continue to probably pursue are fish passage grants. So that goes along with our culverts on our roadways to improve fish passage on those. And we have some further examples of other fish passage grants that we will get to later in the presentation.
Great. Thank you.
So I have a couple. Go ahead. Representative Sumner.
So through the chair, I believe the Matsu Borough has had a lot of success in fish passage grants. Have you guys reached out to them and maybe asked how they've been doing it?
Through the chair, Representative Sumner, we are local planners in Central Region Office have been working with the Matsu planners on some of their grants. I don't know if we've cooperated on an application yet to date, but we would be happy to do so and continue those conversations. We do have a large project on the Parks Highway that will impact a lot of the culverts around the Matsu.
Thanks. So I'm a little disappointed in the Federal Rail Association grants, zero awarded. I don't, you know, maybe we just needed to apply for more. Would that be you guys or would that be the railroad applying for those?
And for the record, Catherine Keith. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the Department of Transportation has submitted grants through FRA, Federal Rail Association. And while we have not been successful, the Alaska Railroad Corporation has submitted grants and they have been successful in receiving awards. Sometimes it's not the railroad that can be the prime applicant, but it is the department that submits the grant on behalf of the Alaska Railroad Corporation, in which case we work together on that opportunity.
So can you give an example of the grants that you submitted, the 57.1, so funds requested? Mm-hmm. What would be an example of that is?
Yeah, and with permission, Mr. Chairman, I can move forward to a couple slides on the grants, if that's of interest.
We can get to it when you get to it, that's fine.
Well, right here, we have a number of grant opportunities, including Railroad Crossing Elimination Grant Program, which is one that we're still working to eliminate, you know, any of the railroad crossings and provide other alternatives. And then there's programs for inner city passenger rail grants, as well as the Consolidated Rail Infrastructure Safety Improvement Grants, which is the CRISI grants. The awards that the Alaska Railroad has received are the Milepost 190 Bridge Replacement Project. They were recently awarded $17 million for the Fort Wainwright Rail Bridge, and then they have another project for the Anchorage North and South Corridor. So we do communicate regularly with the Railroad Corporation, and they have they're placing more and more emphasis on their grant program, and we hope that they continue to be successful offsetting some of their capital program with these grant opportunities.
Okay, so still leaves the question in my mind is which ones have we applied for? So, you know, we have two up in the Denali Borough at grade crossings that are horrible, frankly. And I know that the Federal Railroad Administration, in the three or four times I have talked to them, said that that is their number one priority nationwide, is solving at-grade crossing accidents. And those two up there are recipes for disaster, if you ask me, especially with the big semis that we have hauling and the problems with the gates and the lights. And we see those problems all the time in Wasilla. So I guess what I'm poking at is, have we applied for any of the at-grade crossing grants? And hopefully we will continue to apply until we get those fixed.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Catherine Keith, for the record. I'll provide the committee with a list of our grants that we have applied for. We have other federal funds that we get each year. It's not a large amount, but it's 1.3 million each year for rail crossing that we also can use at the department's discretion to help address some of those safety areas, and we can make sure that those projects are identified. I know our safety staff through our Highway Safety Improvement Program indicate that they don't have a lot of safety data on our rail crossings, so they would be eager to know that to be sure to get them on their list to add to that program. So.
Thanks. And one more question on slide 6, if you wouldn't mind.
Yes.
MARAD grants. So you know, or maybe you don't know, that Point McKenzie or Port McKenzie is a ferry marine highway terminus. And I'm interested to know if you've applied. So when you provide the data on the rail, I'd like to know if you've applied for anything there. I sent a message to Director Tornga the other day and said, hey, when the Matsu finishes Port McKenzie, when can you start the first ferry service? Mm-hmm. So I'd kind of be interested to know that. It'd sort of be a novel thing, both Representative Stutz and I would be at the grand opening.
We would.
When you're ready. Go ahead, Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it. Are all of the Marine Highway grants that have been applied for 50% match or just a portion of them?
Through the Chair, Representative Stutz, the only portion that is 50% match is the operating grant. The capital program is typically 20% match and then 80% federal. And the department, in general, we have that opportunity to request an exemption because of some of the provisions that we have called out for Alaska, that it could be 100% federal share if we request that as well. So only the operating grant has the 50% requirement.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, on we go.
Thank you. And, you know, the first opportunity that we can just run through is the MARAD or Maritime Administration grants. The grants that they have available are for port infrastructure development. Port McKenzie being an example is candidate for this opportunity. What the department a year ago wanted to prioritize our waterways and so applied through MARAD to have a marine route that is extended, where originally we had an M5 route that went from Seattle and down along the Aleutian chain. Now M11 extends that and it goes all the way along the west coast and north along the coast over to Canada. And it includes our riverine, our navigable waterways throughout the rivers of Alaska as well. So those communities are able to apply for these funding opportunities now, including shipyard grants, barge landings. It is a port program, and so we do want to be careful that we're looking at things that do reduce the cost of freight as their ultimate priority. These, at the slide that we're looking at, it speaks to the Port Improvement Development Program, or PIDP. What the department, we've been supporting and advocating for a number of these awards. And you can see just how successful Alaska has been, all the way from Whittier to Jackalof Bay to Yakutat, all the way out to Cold Bay, which was a recent award. And altogether, while the department has submitted 6 grants, we've gotten 1 successful, which was the because we're the sponsor of the Cold Bay Dock infrastructure replacement. But that being said, we're partnered with the Prince William Sound Economic Development District on the Prince William Sound Ferry Terminal projects. And again, this is just supplemental funding to help get those ferry terminals upgraded so we can have a greater variety and flexibility with the vessels going out to those communities.
Can we get a breakout of those grants as well that you've applied for for the ports? And next time I hope to see Port McKenzie on this list. Thank you.
The Homer Deepwater Port's going to beat you to it.
All right.
Yes, thank you.
Anybody else with a snide comment for the chair?
Okay. Thank you. The Secretary, U.S. DOT Secretary's Office, also has a number of opportunities. These include the Multimodal Project Discretionary Grants, which get a lot of attention. These are the MPDG grants, and they have 3 opportunities, mega, infra, and rural. Those largely depend on the magnitude of the project by funding and also geographic location. Another opportunity that has gotten a lot of attention is the RAISE, or Rebuilding America's Infrastructure, with sustainability and equity. And this is otherwise has been in the past Tiger grants and then Build grants. They're now RAISE grants. These grants can fund projects between the RAISE program and the MPDG program between $25 million and over $100 million. So these could be huge opportunities for these bigger projects that we have to offset our existing formula funds to get them accomplished. And we have a list here of some of the programs and projects across the state that have been successful. I will say that the Department of Transportation has submitted several grants for all of these programs. In fact, it looks like 27, so several. And We have not been successful with any of our major projects. What we have been successful in through the RAISE program is a $9.9 million grant for statewide equitable community connectivity action plan, which we're looking forward to. However, our communities across Alaska, the community-driven awards, have had success. And this includes the Juneau Douglas North Crossing Project, Clark's Point, the Cake Access Road. So projects that have been in the works for some time do have funding in thanks to these programs. So we'll continue to look for our best strategy moving forward with these, but clearly supporting community-driven projects is likely our best approach here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, thank you for the information on the RAISE and MPDG grants. That's really exciting, but unfortunate that we don't have the high success rate. Do we have an idea, perhaps, of other communities or state DOTs that have received this type of funding and what makes us less attractive to the feds than other states?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Mina, we have done some data analysis on not only that program, but just nationwide, all of the opportunities. And this one in particular has a large emphasis on benefit cost analysis. Mm-hmm. And for us, with our low population groups, regardless of how critical the project is for our state, it becomes difficult to be competitive. We look for other opportunities to be competitive through the other criteria. But this is one that's a constant struggle, is to get a benefit cost analysis that's greater than one in any of our projects. Mr. Moser, would you like to add anything up to that?
For the record, yes, Adam Moser. And to Representative Mina, yes, we do know which projects are getting funded here. They are very large. The most recent round of MEGA were some billion-dollar awards to major large bridge projects and $500 million awards to port projects, for example. So they are looking at very large projects to fund. As Deputy Commissioner stated, the data analysis that goes into that is quite intensive, and we're upping our game there, and we look to have competitive applications in the future.
Thank you.
Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. I'm curious on these community awards. Are these awards that have been applied for by the state, or are these awards that have been applied for directly from the communities?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stutz. Some of these projects the department has provided the technical support for, but then it's ultimately the local government that does the application and owns the project and moves forward. In some cases, Juneau, Douglas North Crossing, for example, the department, our South Coast region, is working through the planning and design of that project, but they're doing so in collaboration with the city and borough of Juneau. And tends to be a successful arrangement with many of these projects, is just partnering with the community. And if it's a priority for them, we support that. And if it's funded, then we find a way to support the project. Sometimes there's opportunities for the community to pass through those funds to DOT. So DOT is working on the project and can provide that support. And it's flexible with all of these, how we decide to have a working arrangement with the community.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Vance.
Thank you, through the chair. I have written letters of support for RAISE grant for the city of Homer, and I was kind of curious about the same thing. But the commissioner has talked in general about setting up offices to assist communities. Is this kind of one of the purposes, is to help facilitate these grants and get that collaboration going forward?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Vance, 100%, yes. I believe it may have been mentioned last week, but the CTED is the acronym, or Community Transportation Engagement Department Division. Excuse me, I'll find the name and correct that. But what that is a way to be able to have that support for community-driven projects. And we have several of these projects, whether that's for active transportation or for multimodal projects such as a harbor, Harbor Grant program. Those become difficult or challenging projects sometimes for staff to implement. And this group not only can help work with communities on their projects, but also projects that we have, such as our Transportation Alternatives Program, or TAP. That's for key pedestrian projects, pathways, access, and you know that takes a unique amount of collaboration and support to make sure that the vision of the community gets executed in the project. And so that group is focused on supporting local governments and finding ways to either pass opportunities through to them to move forward with projects or just help them be successful with the needs in those communities. So that is underway.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you. Next slide. On we go.
Mr. Moser, would you like to speak to this?
Yes, sir. For the record, Adam Moser. And this is an example of one of the successful projects we've had in collaboration with the Alaska Municipal League. Largely, they are helped us in the concept of this and will also be a subrecipient, helping us carry out the activities under this. But this will look at our statewide needs for communities and connectivity. So a lot of communities that are off the road network, et cetera, how do we connect them into our transportation system? And this also pairs with another transportation grant that we received for transit studies, I should say, a transit study grant that will also look at equity and connectivity to the entire transportation system. So bringing in, say, tribal transportation systems that are not connected to the road system, how do they connect with urban transit systems, et cetera. So we are excited about looking at this, and we'll have about collectively $2 million to really study this statewide and come up with an action plan for implementation. This is an example of partnership and ideas that we've been successful at.
Mm-hmm. Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, very excited about this plan and just to have funding for it and to see the progress and all of the statewide collaboration on it. What's the timeline for the completion of the report?
We are just now, there is a significant lag time in months, many months, between the announcement of the award and actual signing grant agreements with the awarding agency. We are just now beginning our conversations with the Federal Highway Administration on this grant agreement. That will take down our schedule, additional budget details, et cetera. That we do expect to have that finalized within a month or so. Once that is finalized, we will be able to start work and access those funds. So we do expect to be accessing those funds and starting work within a month or so.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And I'll continue another example of one of the Office of Secretary grant awards that we received from the Department of Transportation is the culvert removal and replacement project. There's just four separate projects that we applied for. All of those were successful, and total of $31.5 million there. Largest one of those being on the Parks Highway. And collectively, all four of these will open up over 67 miles of new fish habitat in the state. So we're really excited about that. And additionally, you see on the slide that there are many communities that also received there in some Meadow Creek in the Mat-Su Basin.
Okay.
For the record, Catherine Keith, the department's been working hard on data modernization and innovation, and the opportunities that a lot of our staff have been excited about are the Smart Grants Program, Strengthening Mobility, and Revolutionizing Transportation. So one such opportunity is Aero, and this was a successful grant award where we've received $1.9 million in federal funds for this project to use drone technology to help us with our infrastructure inspections. And this helps gather situational analysis and data on when we have emergency events happening. You know, these are the drones that we're using to be able to inspect our landslides, for example, to make sure that it's safe for first responders to be out and traveling, our avalanches. They're out there with bridge inspections now, so our drone technology can go out and be even remotely deployed from a drone dock to be able to look at the bridges and be able to see all sides of a bridge, have our bridge team here in Juneau be able to look at the condition of a bridge in great detail without having to leave their office. And it's absolutely stupendous what this is doing. So we're looking forward to this to help us continue with our unmanned aerial system technology and help develop the expertise here, which is quickly becoming a cornerstone of our program. Our Federal Highways Administration has a number of opportunities, even more beyond this. These are the ones that the department has submitted applications for. These include things for PROTECT, which we do receive some formula funds for promoting resilient operations for transformative, efficient, cost-saving transportation. This is critical funding to help build resiliency into our infrastructure. So while it doesn't help us with repairing damage when that does occur, whether through washout, through events, but we can, once a system is built back up, we can raise the grade, we can build it stronger so that when the next event does come, it is more resilient for that. Reconnecting Communities is another program that has not only the Reconnecting Communities opportunities, but also our Neighborhood Access and Equity program. And this has been successful for the Fairview community to help evaluate what's possible there in the Fairview area with Ingra and Gamble and in some complete street solutions there. And the Bridge Improvement Program is important to us as there's been a number of bridges that the department has identified as needing to be replaced. And through the Bridge Improvement Program, they have a few options for us of planning and large and small projects, depending on the dollar amount that we can apply for. We do have a few examples. The Reconnecting Communities, the community-driven awards have been successful. Reconnecting Communities is important to the department. We have submitted a number of grants ourselves, but have not yet been successful. We do have a couple pending applications, but our communities have, and this also highlights our straight, safe streets for all opportunity. And there's been several communities that have submitted planning grants for safe streets to help improve safety in their neighborhoods. And then once they have a planning grant, what that allows them to do is go back for implementation funding. And altogether, they've received $3 million to help support their own development of safe transportation in their community plans for that.
Certainly. For the record, Adam Moser. Bridge Improvement Program offers numerous type of awards. They have their large bridge program, and that is for projects with over $100 million in project costs. That is funded at 50-50, so 50 from the award, and the other costs of the project must come from another source. The smaller bridge program is anything up to $100 million in total project costs. And then there are also planning grants under the Bridge Improvement Program. We have been successful in working with Kodiak and receiving a planning grant for the Russian and Sergeant Rivers planning study. We have executed the agreement for and are already in the stages of beginning to look at that planning study and implement it there.
All right, on we go.
And if, for the record, Catherine Keith, the Federal Transit Administration, you know, has two groups of funding, primarily for our ferry program. Our rural ferry program is what the state of Alaska is quite familiar with. That's provided us funding for Alaska Marine Highway System, not only for improving the capital of capital investment program of our ferries, but the terminals as well. And it has funding opportunities for electric or low emissions ferries as well. And there is funding for transit in general that includes local transit that bus operators can apply for updating their equipment. The awarded projects from the department, of course, includes a number of five ferry terminal improvement projects, as well as capital funds for four vessels and the Tustamina replacement vessel, design for our new mainliner vessel, as well as the operating grants. Altogether, the department has applied for 8 grants totaling over, about $550 million and have been successful with $416 million of it. And this is largely in thanks to not only all of the state support, our federal delegation advocating for this funding, and there's been a lot of effort that goes into making these opportunities successful for our state.
Thanks. I think Representative Stutz has a question since we're talking about ferries.
I do, but I'm going to back up if I might,
sure.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. And through the chair, back on slide 16, you said that there was a grant for planning. I'm just wondering what the time frame is on this, because I know that this particular area, every year, it's not just flooding, it's flooding homes. And, I know that time is of the essence, so to speak, every year when they're getting flooded out. So what might the time frame be?
Yeah, for the record, Adam Moser, through the chair, Representative Stutz. We can get you a very specific time frame as to when this planning study will be done, and it could go to construction when we talk to our South Coast team that's working on this project. It was that specific need that you mentioned that said, hey, we need to get some funding to do this project. And that we were successful. Everybody's happy to have that funding and figure out the best way to reduce those flooding risks over the long term, get these bridges replaced, et cetera. But we can follow up and get you those exact specifics on the time frame.
I'd be real grateful for that. Thank you kindly.
These are the two that are right there at Woman's Bay.
Yep.
I remember.
They're still flooding.
Yeah. 25 years later.
They were exactly.
And for the record, Catherine Keith, and through the chair, Representative Stutz, as a follow-up, this project has a couple other funding sources to address the needs, and beyond this planning study, there is some emergency funds that are directed to this project to take care of some of the immediate flooding, so you can expect some of the situation to be alleviated while there's a larger planning study happening to understand what is the best long-term solution for this. And there is also some additional capital funds in our statewide transportation improvement program for this project. So it's a bit odd for us to have a planning study and funding for a capital project at the same time, but they'll work together to develop a long-term strategy for this and to alleviate the flooding that's happening.
Thank you. That's very good news. It's certainly appreciated to the folks that live there.
Okay, where were we?
Right.
There we go. 19.
For the record, Catherine Keith. In addition to the ferry grants, the department has received funding for a statewide transit study, and this is through the Areas of Persistent Poverty program. It's a $800,000 planning grant, but that does allow us to look at transit statewide and help work with our current transit operators to identify, what are some things that we can do across what is our MPOs that receive our transit funds, what can we do to help them with some of their needs. They've identified and communicate to us just their concern about the amount of funding that they get and whether or not that suffices for them to continue to operate their transit programs. And within the department, our staffing is low for this program, and we're working to find staff to help support this program and boost up our support for transit in general. So these funds help with that.
Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. To the chair, I'm really excited about that Areas of Persistent Poverty program. I know that in Anchorage, they won the award for Northeast Muldoon to improve that area for the people mover system. And so specific just to the statewide transit study, what is the timeline for that study and what are the expected outcomes of that study?
Yes, for the record, Adam Moser, and through the chair, Representative Mina. This federal aid, this agreement, grant agreement has not yet been finalized. I don't believe we've started that one just yet, so we are a few months out, certainly, from getting this started. But once we have that project team together, we can try to get your office more details on that. We do have an overarching, some larger objectives that we want to accomplish with that study, and that is how do we connect a lot of those areas of persistent poverty in rural areas of Alaska through transit to those centers that they're using. So whether that be healthcare centers in urban areas, et cetera, how can they do that through a connected transit system? So So looking at what it would take in the state to connect multiple disparate transit systems is part of that, what that study will be looking at.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Okay.
And we can't leave out our aviation program with the rural airports across the state. There is an extensive list of outstanding capital improvement projects that our airport improvement program, which gets an entitlement of about $200 million a year to cover, that exceed what that program can do. There are less opportunities available through the Federal Aviation Administration for rural airports, unlike on the highway side where there are a lot of different opportunities. What our statewide aviation team and our international airports have focused on are the airport terminal program. And there's been a number of grants that they've submitted and that have been awarded. So Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport has received a couple grants to help with their baggage handling and the boarding bridge replacement. So we've received $6.8 million there. And another opportunity, which a number of our carriers are excited about, is for our FAST program, which is Fueling Aviation Sustainable Transition, being able to have sustainable or alternative fuels for our international carriers is important. A number of our carriers have requested this, including Alaska Airlines and Atlas, because they have targets to be able to offset their current jet fuel with sustainable aviation fuel. So they've requested that Anchorage International be able to start looking at what it would take to produce and have sustainable aviation fuel available at Anchorage International so that they can fuel up at our facility and help them reduce their jet, the ratio of their jet fuel to sustainable aviation fuel. It's very fascinating and will be a difficult and big lift for our state as we try to figure out what our available biomass is and how we could make that as a manufacturing opportunity and then take that and be able to store it at the Anchorage International. So this grant is to be able to look into that. It's a planning grant for evaluation, economic assessment, looking at what it would take for equipment to make this a possibility. And then we'll continue working with our Alaska Airlines, Atlas, and others on the viability of that, if that continues to be of interest for them.
Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You have the same question in your mind I do.
What's the difference? Are we talking like this? I thought jet fuel was jet fuel, and it sounds very mystical of what you're talking about. Could you give us an idea of what this new fuel is?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, I'm so glad you asked. Sustainable aviation fuel can actually be used as a complete substitute to jet fuel up to a certain percentage. FAA does allow that. I believe it's right now 17%, maybe as high as 30%. And that's currently what they use. Some of like Alaska Airlines, for example. It's similar to a renewable diesel. So what we can do within the state is if we had a byproduct such as like fish oil, for example, or biomass that we wanted to then refine into renewable diesel, that's a drop-in fuel that could be made available. This is what California does right now with their ferry systems. It's a drop-in fuel that they can manufacture that replaces the diesel or their fuel in their ferry systems. So renewable diesel is harder to get right now. It's bought up as much as people can produce it, as is sustainable aviation fuel. There isn't a drop that's available without it being sold because of the targets that international cargo carriers are actually required to meet through their IMO or International Maritime Organization requirements. They have to reduce their emissions. So the options that we have available for some of our cruise lines and cargo liners is to provide them with alternative fuel, be able to have electric charging at our shores where they have to slow down their speeds when they come in here, which then makes it less enticing to come into Alaska. So we do want to maintain the commercial viability of our industry partners as they come into our state. And we're looking at any solution possible to help with that. So that we're future ready for any potential regulations that may come.
Mr. Chairman, I see a robust discussion in the future that our representative from Nikiski might have some thoughts about the impacts of this.
I don't disagree. Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. So I'm a little bit confused. Do you mix this fuel with regular fuel, or do you just use it separately?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stutes. It can be used as 100% drop-in fuel. Renewable diesel, for example, is like a byproduct of a biomass material that gets refined. And I'm not expert enough to explain the chemical process to you, but we'd be happy to share the studies with you and the case studies of other areas. But it would be a drop-in fuel, so we could manufacture that, make it available, and it also can be mixed. So in the case of the Anchorage International, not only would we need to have a manufacturing facility, but you would also need to have a mixing tank where you'd have the right ratios of fuel then available to Alaska Airlines and to Atlas and others that are currently using this. It's a significant undertaking.
You put wood boilers in front of the 747 biomass.
Right. Wow. Thank you.
Yeah.
I've never heard of it.
Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, I'm really interested in this conversation just about fuel alternatives potentially. That could be a future discussion for a meeting. I'm curious if the Fueling Aviation Sustainable Transition Grants is also related to some of the work that's being done to look at avgas alternatives, and it's been a bit of an area of focus for my district because we're right next to Merrill Field, which is a very active small airport, and we've been looking into the cumulative impacts from that lead exposure.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Mina, absolutely. This had a tremendous team, not only of state agencies, but our private partners as well. So this included Alaska Energy Authority, Department of Natural Resources, included the University of Alaska, and of course, Anchorage International and others. So we would love to talk more about the work. And primarily, there's been a lot of work done to identify the available biomass across the state where it makes sense to be able to use that for fuel, and mostly be wanting to have that flexibility or independence to be able to use those resources as needed to produce fuel if we can. But there still needs to be, there's a bit of a skepticism that if the state does even have enough of the material in order to be able to produce fuel, that would be requested by our air carriers, for example. But I think what they've identified is there are places where that could make sense, and just need to figure out where that is. Thank you.
Okay, on we go.
Okay, Catherine Keith, for the record, the last thing we'd like to touch on here is a little bit about the process. Like, what grants are we going to go after and secure as a department? With the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program, our list of projects there, we have plenty of projects that are available for us that are already in progress. What the granting agencies, the federal agencies are looking for are projects that are shovel ready. They want to see things that they can turn around quickly, and those become more competitive, in addition to other factors that Mr. Moser here can speak to understand what grant we should move forward with. What a team of our staff and consultants has done was look at all of our projects that we have, and we can model the criteria for all of these programs and then try to come up with a score basically on whether or not what project would be most eligible or most successful of being awarded. Those aren't always the projects that we move forward with, but doing this does help us make a determination on which would be most likely, and it gives us a way forward with what grants we do submit for.
Yes, for the record, Adam Moser. Readiness, as the Deputy Commissioner has mentioned, is a huge part of these grants and becoming ever more so. So you can imagine the federal administration wants to get that money out, and they want to show that it's working quickly. The merit criteria there differs by grant. It can be everything from please show us with data how this enhances intermodal connectivity on certain grant opportunities. Other would be, how does this enhance equity within the impacted community? They're increasingly wanting hard data for that, as well as the benefit cost analyses that go along with these studies. So we are working with our consultants to determine which ones of our projects are going to be most competitive based on readiness, based on merit criteria for each one of those, and then making sure that our benefit cost analyses is including all of the benefits and taking original approaches for Alaska situation, because we do have unique costs up here, of course, and we have unique benefits that we have to be able to monetize those and explain those to our federal partners.
So how much, when you're doing these grants, how much are we putting together into, Canada now calls them, they don't call them intermodal corridors, they call it, or utility corridors, they call them economic corridors. So rail, broadband, electricity, gas, all in one corridor. It increases the return on investment, or the, because if you try to develop a railroad and you put a gas line up there, now all of a sudden you have, several thousand customers north of there that are part of the return, that are getting a return on the investment. So I guess that's a question. Are we looking at that? Are we looking at that way? Because it's not all just transportation. It would be other agencies as well involved, right?
For the record, Catherine, Keith, yeah, that's correct, Representative McCabe. We do need to look at a wide variety of factors when we put together a benefit cost analysis. The federal agencies are sometimes pretty strict with what's allowable to be included in those, and what the time frame is in which we can say that the benefits will be realized. But we will seek your input when we have the next benefit cost analysis to review and try to get some extra ideas in there, because I do think as a state that becomes very important to be able to tell the story of why these projects are so critical to our state's economy. And sometimes that may not always be as equivalent to what you may get in a larger city in the lower 48. So we do need to tell that story as much as we can.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah. So that is that the last slide, I guess?
That's the last slide, and we do have a QR code here. A couple inquiries have come up about the list of grants that we have submitted for. We do have a discretionary grant page with our websites where we typically try to post the grants that we submit, especially as a lot of federal agencies do like to go to these websites for additional information or letters of support, and it ends up becoming a pretty interesting encyclopedia of the projects around the state. And we are tying this to our other capital modules that we've spoken to about our capital projects, so that you can see not only what our capital project is, but also any grant applications that we have for those projects. And I encourage you to take a look at those if you're curious, and we'll continue to populate this as we look to double the amount of grants in the upcoming year, if that's our direction that we're given. So with that, happy to answer any further questions on this topic.
Anybody else?
Mm-hmm.
Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, just one quick comment going on to the website for the discretionary grants. I really love the usability for the public on looking at different programs or projects that DOT is focusing on. When you click the button and it says participate and it has a description of the project, I don't quite see another area where the public can provide feedback. So where can they do that?
Through the chair, Representative Mina, I'll take a look at that when we get back and make sure that everything is functioning correctly. Typically on each project, there is a place, and sometimes it's on the home page. This is using a tool that we've used for our STIP as well to provide public comment and feedback. So we'll make sure that there is a place that is indeed the intent of it, that for every project there can be comments on each of those. So thanks for bringing that to our attention. Thank you.
Representative Sumner.
Through the chair, did you say something about equity scoring for projects, and what did you mean by that?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Representative Sumner, there's a requirement for most of these projects to be able to reach Justice 40 communities, and in fact, that's almost solely the Infrastructure Investment Jobs Act requires that the benefits of our project, 40% of the benefits of the project, need to go to just as 40 communities. So within these projects, what they'll request when we submit grant applications is that we provide them with a map of what area the project is in and whether or not it's a Justice 40 or disadvantaged community. And if it is, it'll get a certain number of points, and if not, it won't.
Could you send me the map? Thank you.
We'll find out, you know what it means. Yeah. We don't have a whole lot of choice in it. We want funding, so.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Sumner, a quick follow-up. What is fascinating is that the state itself can define what disadvantaged community is in our statute. So that would be wonderful to take a look at, because some of that is within our state control. A lot of Alaska is just inherently a disadvantaged community by definition. And so most of our projects, in fact, do fit and check that box without difficulty because of the locations and the remoteness of them. So it hasn't been a hurdle for us moving forward with any projects, but it is something that is a factor.
Okay, thank you much. I appreciate you guys being here. You don't really look much like Don Manon, but thanks. So are you doing the next bill? Or okay, so we'll take a brief at ease while we reset. Back on the record, and I probably have a script here I'm supposed to read. We're here for HB 288's introduction. HB 288 is an act renaming Fairbanks International Airport as Don Young Fairbanks International Airport and providing for an effective date. So for HB 288's introduction, we have Andy Mills, DOT liaison. And Andy's already at the table. Put your name on record and begin your bill introduction, sir.
Thank you, Chair McCabe and members of House Transportation. My name is Andy Mills, Special Assistant for DOT. And thank you for the opportunity to present on HB 288, which seeks to name the Fairbanks International Airport the Don Young Fairbanks International Airport. Governor Dunleavy was working on this legislation with us in October timeframe, and I feel up front I should also mention that several other infrastructure and areas have been named after the late congressman since then, so I know that that's a part of the conversation we'll have as well. But for this legislation, what it seeks to do is recognize the former late congressman, Don Young, who served nearly five decades for Alaska. The rationale for that is that, of course, Don Young was a state legislator. He did modernize air commerce systems and require that aircraft be outfitted with radio beacon devices as a contribution when he was in the legislature. And then in Congress, the late congressman served as the chair of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee and sponsored numerous bills to reshape infrastructure and safety requirements. I think it's no doubt that his contributions in Congress as our sole representative there was impactful to everyone in the state, especially over that period of time. The contribution, as you know, there's been a recognition at the Anchorage International Airport to honor former Senator Ted Stevens that this the thought on this is that as a hub, Anchorage and Fairbanks act, of course, in unison. They are an international airport system, and that Senator Stevens and Congressman Young were pillars at a time in Alaska. In fact, if I'm recalling this correctly, I believe Congressman Young came at a very pivotal time for TAPS when he first got into Congress. I do plan, if the bill comes before the committee again, to provide plenty of background on the congressman's accomplishments and seek anyone who would like to provide a comment. I will tell folks I've had a very healthy mix of people who have said they would support this and folks who have other ideas for local names that they would like to see represented at that airport. To that effort, I would also mention that we certainly understand that notion that being an international airport, it is a hub for the entire northern state. That means a lot of rural communities rely on Fairbanks International and fly through there. Certainly, to name that airport, one would want to look to a name that is a statewide name. At least that's the purpose of this legislation. So, and as for other facilities being named, certainly the Port of Alaska has adopted Don Young as the name. And very recently, the congressional delegation did name a volcano, a job center, and a federal building after the late congressman. So certainly there is quite a bit out there that I will acknowledge up front, just so that it's on the record, that is named after the former congressman. I guess I would say that there is no state infrastructure, no state asset that is currently named after the late congressman, because you do have a federal and local representation, but not something codified by the legislature, which would have the role of naming something from a state perspective. And so I am happy to go through a sectional. It's a very short bill, or answer questions at this time.
Does anybody feel a pressing need to go through the sectional? It's pretty self-explanatory. So why don't we just, at this point, we can open it up for questions. I have a couple. I'm sure there might be a few more. So I don't think we need to hear the sectional necessarily. So anybody got questions before me? Representative Vance.
Thank you, through the chair. So why Fairbanks? Why not say Juneau with the capital?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, or Vice Chair Vance. In this case, Juneau is a municipal airport, and we have, at least from a state perspective, no jurisdiction to provide a name for that. As a legislative bill to put forward, AS 3540 allows us to name state assets. And so at least from what the governor and from the state perspective, that is what is possible for us. So certainly I anticipate some folks suggesting I've actually heard some suggestions of other state assets. And again, from an best argument standpoint, you're looking from a regional level. For me here, third generation Juneauite, it's Ted Stevens International in Anchorage, or it's SeaTac. Those are my hubs. And I think in the northern part of our state, western part of our state, Fairbanks International is their hub. And so certainly hope that we steer the conversation towards names that have that recognition, although I'm sure there are plenty of laudable names from the Fairbanks area as well.
Okay, so I have a couple questions. First off, the first thing I've heard is many people are like, well, I don't want to get rid of the FAI. And if my background in aviation, I'm almost certain that that would not happen. We didn't rename ANC-TSIA, so I doubt that the FAA is going to want to change the IATA definition or the IATA identifier for Fairbanks. You might correct me if I'm wrong. Juneau is owned by the city of Juneau, a municipality. So Fairbanks is owned by the state. My big question is, 2 years ago, we renamed a bridge and got a $10,000 fiscal note for two signs. Here I see $600. Where did we come up with such a small number? Is that just for the one road sign leading into the on-airport way, or are we going to do a few more signs maybe, or are we going to change anything on the internet, or how did we get $600?
$1,000?
Oh, yeah. Oh, maybe it is. Oh, yeah, it is $600,000. But it's still, I'm not on finance.
100 more signs.
So I'm curious, even so, 600,000 compared to what I think it would take. I think when we talked about renaming the Glen Highway, it was several million sub dollars. So,
right.
Oh, well, there you go. Look at that. Okay, you don't have to answer. It's right there.
But Chair McCabe, you do bring up a good point, and then we can make that distinction. So, again, a bridge, you're right. There are very few signs comparative to a large facility like Fairbanks International, which, going back, you are correct that that ident would not change, as it did not with Ted Stevens Anchorage International. And on the Glen Highway, if I recall correctly, was that 1.2 million? And it was because so many signs along such a long stretch of road. So you are right. It can be complicated. And I rely on my safety and traffic folks when it comes to signage to help steer me clear on the sticker shock of some of those. But from this case, Angie Spear, who runs Fairbanks International, she did run with her staff what she believed the cost would be. We did add in here, just so folks understood, we were not sort of overshooting or trying to ask for too much when we were considering the naming. This also does not include, and Ted Stevens Anchorage International has this very nice sort of plaza with the statue on a bench, and it's a very nice sort of piece. When you go into the airport, people take pictures. It has commemorative plaques. This is not inclusive of something similar at Fairbanks International, and we felt that that was sort of extra, that if folks were entertaining it, certainly could. But from a changing out signage and badges and everything else, this was considered to be the cost of renaming and having all of that changed over.
Thanks. So I think the so then the internet and all that stuff would be another collateral materials on the back part, and no artwork is what I heard you say. Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, another question just related to the fiscal note. What's the timeline for changing all of the items listed in the fiscal note?
Through the chair, Representative Mina, thank you for that. Staff did note that they would probably, I believe it was 6 to 9 months to just, it depends on how aggressively you would want to pursue changing some things out. I don't think they would race out to change everything all at once. You could let certain badges and other items expire. Again, I think it would be prudent about the shift in the change. And so my understanding was that they would, over a period of that year, essentially, but a little less than a year, would be trying to shift over to the new signage, new name.
Thank you.
Cool. No more questions? No more misinterpretations of the fiscal note? Okay. Thanks, Mr. Mills. I appreciate it. And as I said, it's my intention to hold this bill for further discussion and public testimony, if it should come to that. That concludes our business today. Next meeting will be Tuesday, February 6th, when we'll hear introductions to two bills, HB 255, which is the combined Port Authority bill, and HB 282, relating to state land disposal, sale, and leases. Seeing no other business before the committee, we'll adjourn, and the time is 3:20 p.m.